Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of October 16th, and back in the starting lineup is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud?
I'm good. I'm feeling well rested. You know, I got 2 weeks between starts.
2 weeks between starts. You better throw a shutout then.
No, those days are over. I'm going to let you talk.
All right. Well, we really appreciate Zach Ikuma pinch hitting for you last week.
Oh, yeah.
He did a good job.
Much appreciated.
Yeah, I really enjoyed talking with him, and it seems like he had fun as well. So thanks a lot, Zach, if you're listening.
Yep, much appreciated. Enjoyed it.
All right, on this week's show, we've got a couple of quick hitters with Brian Wolf of the Lions and Zealous Wheeler of the Eagles, and we're going to discuss the first rounds of both the PLCS and the CLCS, and hit on Tadahito Iguchi, the new manager of the Lotte Marines. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I went to MetLife Dome on Saturday morning, and you and I were talking all week, and I thought maybe you'd be there, and I'd be able to get one side, and you'd be able to get one side, and we'd be able to combine.
Well, I attended too, but my doctor wanted to talk about an appointment that morning, so I had to go to my my rehab clinic. So
doctors, what do they know?
Well, more than me. I mean, that's a low bar, so we're not going to go there. Well, I was there on Friday, but I was only able to hear the Lions, and I was limited to Ernesto Mejia talking. You know, and he's not playing, and he was sort of like a little fuzzy about things in general. But I mean, he was positive. He said some interesting things about, you know, playoff atmosphere, and he had been there in the Winter League,
right?
When he said it was crazy, and so he knew about that. But it was, and I wanted to ask him about Kikuchi, Yusei Kikuchi, and he says, "Well, he's a competitor, and he's experienced, and he works hard. You know, all the right stuff,
right?
You know, nothing of really any interest.
He filled, you know, he really filled the stat sheet, but there was nothing that stood out."
Yeah, you know, he likes this, so he thinks Sosuke Gend is the real deal, and Kikuchi's a competitor, so we didn't really learn too much. So I'm looking forward to hearing Brian Wolf and Zealous Wheeler.
Yeah, so I had a quick chat with Brian. He was walking basically to the clubhouse. I think I said locker room in the interview, but I think it's the right terminology is the clubhouse. And that is back behind the stairs that they walk up when, what is it, the Road of Victory or Road After Victory or something like that, but with the Lions players.
Victory Road.
Victory Road. There's another set of stairs underneath the stadium that they go up to go to the clubhouse. So I saw him leaving the field, and I knew where to head him off, and I got him right when he got to the top of the stairs, and he's out of breath. And then I did talk to Zealous Wheeler, but it was just before he took BP, so he really wasn't ready to get into a long discussion about anything in particular. Not that he does anyway. He's a guy you have to prepare a lot of questions for, because he's similar to Shaquille O'Neal of the NBA. He'll give you the quick hit bites, but he's not going to talk for a long time anyway. But that's good. You know, he put everything succinctly, and I spliced the chats together. So here's Wolfie and Z Wheelies. Talking to Brian Wolf with the Lions. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right.
He just climbed the stairs here at the at the dome. He's got to go. He's got to go to the locker room here. Now, you guys have seen these guys so much during the regular season. How do you prepare when it comes to the postseason?
You know, with the way we've been throwing against them, I don't think our starters and those guys are going to change much. You know, Yusei's had a great year against them, and Sogami's throwing well, so hopefully we only need two.
What's the main thing you guys talked about in meetings that you can't do against this team?
We really didn't talk too much about what you can do. We did talk about more about attacking, so, you know, we got two pitchers that have attacking stuff, so, especially Yusei. I mean, he just needs to go after guys. His stuff's good enough that he doesn't have to try to pitch around anybody.
All right, now some people say the playoffs are a crapshoot, and that, you know, it's all happenstance. I say, yeah, it's a little bit about rhythm, but it's also about what got you here during the regular season is what's going to carry you in the playoffs. What's your opinion about it?
I think so. I mean, especially for us going into this, you know, our numbers are real well against them, especially at home. So I think, you know, that plays into our advantage. It's in their head a little bit probably already, too, that, you know, we beat them so bad here a lot. So hopefully that just continues.
Now, I already asked you that. I know you're not pitching in this series. So what's your role as you're watching your team go out there all the time and play these games?
You know, it's a little different. You know, just basically a cheerleader for the first series. But, you know, their numbers are proven against these guys, so you know that's the rotation we went with. So it's just, you know, be prepared for the next round, and if we get there and whenever they need me to throw, I'll be ready.
All right, buddy, appreciate it.
Yep.
Good luck, stay healthy, and thanks for the time, man. We're here with Zealous Wheeler just before the start of game one. How you feeling, man? I heard you had a cold.
Yeah, I'm fine now, getting better.
All right, so first question, you guys obviously you play these guys all the time during the regular season, and you guys had a great first half. Second half wasn't as good. But where is this team right now going into this matchup?
Well, we're right where we want to be. You know, we won the last couple games, feeling great. And we're going to see what happens. It's going to be a good game, but we'll see what happens.
All right, now, what do you think about this playoff format? Because personally, I think there's one good thing, and that's that you don't have any off days and you don't have any travel.
That's something I can't control. Just go out there and do my job. It's crazy, but there's nothing I can do.
All right, now, Yusei has had a great season. He's one of the best pitchers in Japan, obviously. How confident are you guys going up against him?
Well, with confidence. You know, anybody can get beat on any given day, you know. That was a season he beat us every time he pitched, but today is 0-0. So he suited up just like we do. We're going to come for it.
Now, you guys, you look at this series, and there's a gap between you guys.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, because you finished behind him.
Right.
What is that gap? Where was it? Was it pitching? Was it hitting?
Just breaking the game. Just a break in the game. You know, we both got pitching, both got hitting, just breaking the game. That's all.
All right. How do you feel about your season personally?
It was a good season, man. I reached my goal, 30 homers, but I didn't reach my goal for stolen bases. But it's great. It's good.
All right. We'll steal you some more. All right. Good luck.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. So for me, there were two quick points. One, that he said, that Brian said, look, Yusei Kikuchi is the kind of pitcher who doesn't have to pitch around anyone. And I think that was important because when, you know, I asked him if there's anything that you guys really can't do against this team. Like, for example, we can't walk guys in the bottom of the order, or we can't, you know, give guys fastballs, you know, dead center. I mean, of course, you can't do that with any team, but I mean, you know, anything specific. And he said no, but then he said that Yusei doesn't have to try to pitch around anyone, which tells me that they're ready to pitch around a few guys, but that Yusei doesn't have to do it, that he's had such a great season, and he really, if you guys, obviously you probably know the results of Saturday's game, but he really punctuated a great season with a great performance on Saturday. So yeah, I thought that kind of stood out because these guys sit around and do all these meetings and have all these meetings, especially the pitchers. And then, as you know, the batteries will sit around and figure out how they're going to go through each guy and try to get them out each time, especially when you're talking about the starters and the catcher. And, you know, first time through the order, second time through the order, third time through the order. And if there's more, let's try to do this or, you know, go off of what we've seen, the guy, how his bat's reacting to our pitches and blah, blah, blah. So, I think when you say Kikuchi has reached the point where he doesn't have to pitch around anyone, I thought that was a profound statement by Brian.
Well, he, when I was talking I wasn't talking to him. I was at the media scrum. I did want to talk to him.
Kikuchi,
Yes, for a variety of reasons. I was thinking of a story, but he didn't quite fill it out in the scrum, and then he was snared by a couple of other people as he left the field. So, and we don't have a history, so I didn't really feel comfortable breaking into that. But anyway, he said something to the degree that I thought was quite interesting, where he said, look, I'm, you know, they were saying, how do you feel about pressure, you know, being your first climax series game? And he said, well, yeah, first of all, he said, I'm probably not going to worry too much until about 30 minutes before the game when I'm going to start psyching myself up. And also, I can't be worried about carrying the team. You know, that's not my job. My job is to worry about my pitches. You know, I'd focus on doing my job and let things take care of themselves. And which is a little bit like what Ernesto Mejia told me the day earlier. I would say just before that, which was, look, everybody's just got to do their job and concentrate. You know, that's the thing. Concentrate.
That strikes me as something that Yusei wouldn't say. I mean, he's the kind of guy, it seems to me, who would take on all that burden and want to do well for the team. So that's a great attitude, actually.
I thought it was interesting. He sort of reminds me of this old-timey car engines that's hiccuping and coughing and revving up finally until it's firing on all cylinders. As I think about his career, was mostly hiccups.
Backfiring. And then
and it'd be like he'd be hitting his stride, and then bam,
a lot of smoke.
And they'd be hitting his stride exactly, coughing and skipping gears. And he seems really smooth and professional now. But he's still got, you know, he's still got that baby face.
Yep.
And he doesn't look like he's 45 years old.
Well, no. But yeah, he looks like he still has some baby fat in his body still.
I know, but he's really, he's pretty tenacious. He's become pretty, he reminds me of is Daisuke Matsuzaka in that respect. And that after about 8 years, after his seventh year or sixth year, he felt like a big game pitcher. He felt like the hype was no longer hype, and it was just part of the normal routine. He was out there to beat you, and he was very calm and cool about it. It was no longer, I'm going to try to throw my fastball past you. I'm just going to beat you, and, you know, I'm going to do it anyway. I don't care if I'm not throwing 95 miles an hour.
Right. And he doesn't have to. You know, he's really... I mean, I think that was the key to this season, is that he had guys off balance because he was throwing the other pitches, the secondary pitches, for strikes. And they weren't just strikes. They were quality strikes. And you saw on Saturday he was setting some guys up and then throwing a fastball right down the middle, and they're just looking at him or flailing at some pitches that were fastballs because they recognized fastball, but they were behind him. They couldn't get to them in time. And it's a great performance from him on Saturday.
With sliders, so you know he's got a really good slider and a really good fastball that not only moves but he has a good location, and not only does he have good command but he has good location of both those pitches, as it was on Saturday. And I think what's obviously, while he's supremely confident, and manager Hatsuhiko Tsuji was saying shortly thereafter that the team. Basically, no. The Lions know they beat the Eagles, like as our old colleague Dave Hilson used to say, beat them like an old futon. And is it basically, we're pretty confident and positive. You know, we know what we've done against them this season. We're not thinking we're going to lose.
Right.
So there was brimming with confidence, and that's the kind of game he pitched. We'll see how that plays out if they advance against the Hawks.
Right. And then for Zealous, for me, I think, he talked about, obviously they knew that, and I think it was a 14-game winning streak
I think he said eight in a row this season.
This season,
which was
but
correct.
I'm talking about.
But he does have a 14-game winning streak.
Kikuchi,
yes.
Had beaten
14, not in 14 games, 14 straight starts.
So yeah, he's owned him basically. He's got a pink slip that says Eagles on it in his car, and Zella's saying it starts 0-0 today, and we're going to go after him. We're going to go get him. And you know, I love the attitude of professional athletes. You know, they always think, well, today's, you know, a basketball player thinks, well, the next shot is going to go in. The football player says, well, the next play is going
to
work. And
we
the baseball player said, yeah, I love it. I love it. They should be confident. But they don't say, well, this guy's better than I am, but maybe I can get to him today. You know, and maybe even
well,
if they think it, they don't say
maybe
it.
Okay, yeah, well, I had this conversation with former Nippon Ham Fighters slugger Matt Winters, who's now a scout for the Fighters. We were sitting at Nago at the Fighters camp, and I was asking him about the quality of baseball in Japan, and he said, look, when we faced the Kintetsu Buffaloes when Hideo Nomo was pitching, I just assumed I was going to strike out twice.
Right.
Until he got out of the, until he was out of the game. And then I, you know, and then I get to hit against the bullpen and I get a hit.
Right.
I wasn't worried. He wasn't worried. Or, you know, the, any hit against Nomo was a bonus, you know, and he said that, you know, that's the thing is you get to hit against weaker opponents. Not everybody's Hideo Nomo, but yes, agreed. I mean, you do go out there with confidence, and he was a former player talking about that. But if you don't think you're going to get a hit, if you don't think you can get a hit, if you don't think you can win the game, why play?
Yeah, I mean, and I know that are things that these athletes, and to be honest, it's razor thin. It's so close, the difference sometimes between winning and losing or getting a guy and not getting a guy. On a particular pitch or something that you swing at. So I understand, you know, it's a very fine line, but obviously they had a chance and they weren't able to make it happen that day. And maybe though at one point, if we see Kikuchi staying, because there are rumblings that he wants to go stateside and there's interest over there, that maybe next year they can break that losing streak. But until then, I just say, well, he's better than you guys are right now. And that's, you know, that's showing up in the numbers here. But
I think he was probably the best pitcher in the Pacific League this year.
Yeah.
And
other than Dennis Sarfati, but I mean, best starter for sure.
Well, yeah. I mean, the best pitcher who has to make games. Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. Let's not get into that.
And was as far as Zealous, I mean, the other thing with Zealous, I thought was kind of fun. I thought that was interesting, and you know, and it's 0-0, and I like that. And I think the thing is, do you know what his stolen base goal was for the year?
You did an interview earlier in the season, and I thought I don't remember. I'm going to say 20, but I don't recall.
I don't remember either. That's why.
Oh, don't ask me. Thinking. Don't do that.
No, I'm not quizzing you. I'm just saying don't cut that point. Out. I thought maybe you knew. No. I don't remember. Yeah, he's just, sometimes he comes at you with a shotgun. You know what I mean? It's like stuff here over there. But I did like I think obviously they looked, one of the things that's different about the Eagles was, you know, Mogi's back, obviously. And the interesting thing is they had so much success at the beginning of the year with Carlos Piguero batting second in the lineup. But they've given up on that. And, to put a bunter there. They've got some decent bats. They don't have the Lions' depth, but they seem determined to play as small as they can.
Zealous had 7 steals and he was tied for the team lead.
Wow. Yeah, I noticed the Eagles were not a good base stealing team. They weren't
the
good
kind of team
I
like
things.
To say if they're going to steal a base, they usually have a mask and a gun.
Yeah. Well, I was tweeting the other day when I'm sort of in the process of collating all my stats for the year. I noticed when I was doing the stolen bases, I noticed that if the pennant was won by the team that was the best at stealing bases and the best at preventing bases, and in this case it was the same team.
Preventing stolen bases.
Yes. The best team in Japan would be the Chiba Lotte Marines.
Aha.
So there's your
truth.
Stolen base. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Truth hurts. Okay.
All right. So so we had the first round of the PLCS and it's split. And actually both series are split. The CLCS is also 1-1. So we will just give you the rundown of the first two games, and both games are coming out later on Monday when we will upload the show in the morning, and then about 10 hours later, baseball.
So this week's preview is this week's show is essentially a preview of Game 3 of the first stage of the climax of the
We don't use stage on this show. We use the correct term, round.
Round. Oh, I feel kind of square.
You are.
Thank you. So
but
okay,
you'll get
the
around
first
to it.
Round. Ooh, I got okay to it.
All right, so
I intuited that one.
Okay,
but the so this is basically a preview of Game 3 of the first round of the anticlimax series.
Well, they're reaching a very massive climax on both sides of the Japan series. First, before we get into it, I wanted to ask if you were superstitious at all, even as a fan.
Me?
You?
When I was younger, yeah. But now, no.
No. Yeah, when I'm involved in the action, if I'm playing and I have control over things, I want to do things the same, so I probably tend to be superstitious. But since I don't get involved, I know that anything I do has absolutely no impact on what happens on the field, I'm not mm-hmm. superstitious. But what did you think of the Lions going with those NGC or those red uniforms for the climax series? And I'm thinking because, you know, they went 20-4 during the regular season while wearing them, so they wanted to bust them out in the regular in the postseason here. What'd you think of that?
Well, I like the uniforms in general. I don't like it when they're playing the Eagles because you can't see who's
that's my who's point. Where. That is exactly my point. And I was actually, you know, I read about it. I knew they were going to wear them. And I just thought, well, then the Eagles are going to go with the black uniforms or they're going to go all white or something, because I thought the Lions deserved to lose the series just because of that. You know the Eagles are going to wear red. So if they say, no, we're not going to change our uniforms, then you can't show no regard for the aesthetic and the visual appeal of these games, because I'm not thinking about today and I'm not thinking about me. I'm thinking about 10 years from now when they show these highlights and there's some young kid and he can't tell what team is what team. And, you know, it just looks stupid. It looks like an inter-squad game or something. It's a fashion crime. I don't care about the next series. I doubt that they'll wear them in the next series, but even if they do, it's probably going to be okay because the Hawks are completely different color scheme, so it won't be a problem.
Well, the Hawks the Hawks could come up with one.
They could, but they wouldn't do that. The Hawks have more sense.
Hashtag
as an organization.
They must have red uniforms. They've got victory blue, yeah. And they've got purple, they've got yellow.
They've got yellow, black, blue, purple, green. Remember the green ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got red throwbacks. Ones too. I've seen them. I remember
they
them.
Must.
So, yeah.
They must.
All right. So, that was the only
thing. I think they're trying to fool the Hiroshima Carp. I think this is a plan. They're going to confuse the Hiroshima Carp into thinking that they're playing themselves.
All right. Well, everything seemed to be working out fine in game one of the series on Saturday. They won 10-0. As we said, Kikuchi, he threw a five-hitter, 121 pitch shutout. And it was funny because Jason Kotsky of the Japan Times, he had a tweet saying that it was a real sexy stat to have a shutout, but maybe they should think about getting Kikuchi out. And at first I thought, yeah, you know, he needs to get ready for the next round if they're going to be there. But then I thought, you know what? It's probably the best thing that you can do, especially if you got your ace on the mound. Have one guy just finish that game off, because you don't know the next day how many guys you're going to need to use. And as it turns out, they lost game two, so they're going to have to go and use the bullpen probably most likely in game three too. So that kind of looms large for them that they only had to use one guy to get through that first game. So I thought I was okay with it in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay too. And you know, what I've seen is NPB's been really good about pitches. And knowing, you know, when the pitchers, you know, when I came to Japan, this Japan NPB was like a, you know, I don't want to be mean, but I think they had an exhibit at Madame Tussauds in the Chamber of Horrors.
Hashtag high heat.
I mean, it was brutal. And, you know, it was 180 was, I mean, I'm not saying it was common, because you had to be a good enough pitcher to get that far to stay deep in that game. But, you know, 180, 220, 230 pitches in a game was not that unusual. Now they're pretty careful. My colleague at Kyoto News was saying, don't you think that's a lot? And I think, well, no, first of all, he isn't going to pitch it for 6 days.
Right, right.
And he can't make the start of the Hawks series, which starts on Wednesday.
Right.
So, no, I don't think so. I think he was at 112 when he finished the eighth inning. And, but, you know, when you've got, you're going to the top of the ninth and you've got a 10-run lead, yeah, I think that's when you take the guy who probably hasn't pitched a lot and say, let's see if you can avoid giving up 10 runs in the ninth inning.
see if you can do that, son. Good luck. No, yeah, I was with you. I was thinking the same thing that he, you know, he was only going to pitch in the next series once anyway. It's not like he was going to pitch the first game, and that's the only way you could basically try to come back with a guy is if he pitches game
right.
one. And he's on not the other throw hand, game one.
On well, the they were hand, leading. On the other hand, you know, when they're leading 7-0 after 7, and you're thinking, you know, he's thrown about 70 pitches. Well, maybe he could, you know, that's where you get cute. That's when you get adventurous. When he's, you know, that 7-run, 7th-inning lead and thinking we need two more innings to save 7 runs, and he's only about 70 pitches, that maybe we could have him come back in 4 days and start the first game of the Hawks series.
Right. Well,
and that's that would have been interesting.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I was fine with the decision. I'm thinking, you know, just get your ace out there, win, put this game behind you with one guy and move on to game two and start worrying about that. But the big blow came early on in that game. Takahiro Norimoto, the ace for the Eagles, hits Sosuke Genda, and then Hideto Asamura cranks a pitch that wasn't all that bad a pitch.
No, I thought it was a good. I mean, the location was good. It wasn't a great fastball. It didn't have a lot of life on it. But you got no business.
Wasn't bad. Yeah.
No, the location was good. It was the move. I thought it was a little flat. But you got no business yanking a pitch out of the park you got to hold the knob of the bat against your chest.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a great piece of hitting. So he hits a 2-run home run, and Hotaka Yamakawa ends up with 3 hits, and Takeya Okawari Nakamura, he hits a home run later in the game. So it just kind of, you know, they got into that bullpen and they beat it up pretty good too. And Norimoto, his shortest outing of the season, gave up 7 runs. He didn't look good. I didn't like a lot of the stuff that he had done this year. He usually had, you know, even when he pitched well, he had, you know, 1 bad inning here or there, and that usually cost him. It wasn't just 1 run that always cost him. I know late in the season he had a game against the Hawks where he pitched really, really well and then lost it late by giving up a run. But, you know, he just hasn't been the great Nori, the guy I was all over about a couple years ago, and I was singing the praise.
Who looked like that at the beginning of this season. He looked like he was
going to be there. But even with that, you know, you'd have 1 blow-up inning, and then he'd pitch around it. And he'd end up making the start look like a quality start almost, but he just wasn't great. And
I don't think he had good command of his pitches. Yeah. But the other thing was, he looked to be a little bit, well, I think I'd be shell-shocked too if I gave up that home run, because after that he just kind of looked like, man, this is going to be a hard day. I better kind of like pitch around myself.
Right. And then there was another inning where there was a close play at third, and
that's where he blew the game.
Yeah, I thought the runner was safe. I mean, you know, it's hard to tell. They don't show a lot of replays here, and they don't even have the replay challenge system in the first place, so you can't even argue with it. You know, you just go back to the mound and throw your pitches.
Yeah, but they had a chance
really
to get
got
this
upset about it and thought he was going to get out of the inning and didn't. So
that's where he threw the he had a, basically it was a sack fly with the bases loaded, and the runners on first and second went to third when the throw came home, and the catcher Motohiro Shima took the ball way in front of the plate, cut it short, and threw to third. Zales Wheeler put the tag. I think it was Yamakawa, and they were adamant they'd got him. And after that, it was like 2 pitches later that Norimoto just hung one that even Ginjiro Sumitani couldn't miss, because he nearly put that one in the seats.
Yeah,
he hit it.
Yeah, he had 3 hits in the game, Mr. Sumitani. Look at me. I know. I can swing.
That's right. So certified swinger. Yeah. So that was when the game got away. I think that disappointment, he just lost it briefly. And then after that, it was like he couldn't throw anything worth a damn.
Right. So, 10-0 again, pretty much, the Lions frolicked and celebrated and had fun in their red.
Frolicked. You get uniforms. Bonus points. Red frolicking in their red uniforms. Okay. All right. I like it.
All right. So then, today, everything started out on a completely different plane in a 4-1 win for the Eagles. Mm-hmm. Egoro Mugi hits a ball. The first pitch. Get me over off speed pitch. I forgot to look it up. I would say a change up or something like that, but I didn't see what it was. And he just takes it out to center field. One pitch, one run. Eagles are up, and they scored a couple more runs early on in the next inning and added one in the seventh. And I think it was Mugi who got him started, but it was Takayuki Kishi, the former Lions pitcher. Was the story of the game because he just, he said in the interview, hero interview, he said, look, my goal was to challenge the hitters, even if I gave up a solo home run. He said he watched the day before and all these guys, and like he hadn't seen him the rest of the whole season, but he said, I watched the game yesterday, meaning Saturday's game, and these guys, they all strike fear into you. They can hit the ball so hard, they can hit with power. But I didn't care if I gave up a home run. My goal was to challenge each of the hitters and try to go as far as I could until they took me out of the game. And that turned out to be 6 1/3 innings, scoreless all the way. And, excellent performance from him. 8 strikeouts, 3 hits, and no walks.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Yeah, he said basically he was going to challenge him in the zone. Of course, he got him out of the zone quite a bit, but pretty much he was throwing lots of pitches in the strike zone, and his changeup was working, his fastball, he was really spot on with his fastball. And the two pitches where he was leading 1-0 in the first inning, and then really the game turned in the first inning because Shogo Akiyama led off the bottom of the first with a beautiful play. He was jammed. He hit a flare over second base into shallow center. And the ball had that sweet spot of hang time and location. Mm-hmm. It took so long to get down that he had a healthy jump around first before the ball hit the ground and bounced. And he steamed into second base for a leadoff double, which was brilliant. And then the next guy, and then Kishi fell behind Sosuke Genda.
Uh-huh.
And he threw a 3-2 pitch. He missed badly with a really straight 3-2 fastball. And Genda's eyes were about as big as the roof on MetLife Dome. And he smacked that thing and looked for all the world like a game-tying RBI double. But Genji Akaminai laid out, caught that thing, turned the inning around. And after that, boy, Kishi was like going, I'm not going to let that happen again.
Yeah, yeah.
3 strikes, 2 beautiful at-bats. I mean, just workmanlike at-bats from Kishi. And then, so he's got a 3-run lead going into the bottom of the second, and he's facing and the leadoff hitter. He goes 3-2 again, and he throws another fat. It's like he was not giving in. I mean, 3-2, I'm going to throw this pitch in the strike zone, and you hit it, son. And he threw a fat one, 3-2, just missed hit it a little bit, but another sharp play by Akaminai at first base, and that was that. After that, it was like just forget it. He was just too good.
Yeah, the thing about Kishi this season is he threw 176 1/3 innings. That's the most he has thrown since 2013. Mm. And he had 26 starts. That's the most he has made since 2013. And a lot of that was health. He had been experiencing some health problems, and he had back issues and other nagging injuries that have kept him off the mound over the years, but he's been fairly healthy this year, and he looks like he's that guy who can really lead them. I wouldn't have been surprised if he had thrown game one. I think just to offset you say Kikuchi, I think they were happy to put him in that number two slot, just thinking maybe we get a lesser pitcher, and if we get a couple runs, Kishi can do the job for us. So he really did look sharp yesterday, or I should say today, and that evens the series. So today, Manabu Mima for the Eagles is going to go up against Ryoma Nogami for the Eagles, for the Lions. And, you know, Nogami's been pitching really well, but what do you think about that matchup?
I like Mima. I think he's got better stuff, but, you know, it's, you got to be really, you know, and you know, Dennis Sarfati's told me this, and Rick Vandenhurk's told me this, you know, to, and they're not the only ones who've told me this, but basically the same thing goes for the Lions that go for the Hiroshima Carp. Kanemoto said it at the end of the season, if you're going to keep, you have to really execute your pitches. They are not a normal hitting team. And they're, you know, they've basically got offense top to bottom. And you just can't get away with a lot of mistakes against them. I mean, Kishi got away with, I won't say it was a mistake. He was challenging guys in the zone. That was his plan, but he missed his location badly. But it worked out well.
Yeah, and, you know, we've talked about it before, I believe. It's just, you know, people's announcers, especially TV announcers, like to say he made one mistake all night, and you know that's the one that was a hit for a home run.
Like, no, he didn't make many.
That's not always the case. You guys make mistakes all the time. They just don't always get hit, and
it always cost them.
Yeah, some of their mistakes end up being good pitches. You know, they're close enough to the strike zone that they get guys to swing, but they're still not things that the hitters can do something with.
Right. So anyway, so I think that's a tough. I haven't looked at Mima's. I don't think his numbers against the Lions. Nobody's numbers against the Lions are all that good. It's going to be a really interesting. Mima's the much better pitcher of the two, but you know the Eagles' offense ain't the Lions' offense.
Right.
So it's going to be really fun. I think that's going to be tense.
Yeah.
But here's the thing: the Lions only have to tie the game. Only through 12 innings.
If they're even, they're up. It's like
they're even, they're in. Yep.
Last week Zach and I made our picks, and I actually picked the Lions to win it in three, and I guess I'll stick with it. I mean, Nogami isn't the greatest pitcher in the world. He doesn't have great stuff, but he's a fighter, and he has been pitching well down the stretch for them. So I give him a chance. And Mima's not the guy you always think, well, I'm going to bet on him. So, I mean, you know, I would bet there's going to be some runs scored, but that's about all I can estimate from that game. So we will predict. We'll talk about the second round after we get through all the games. But let's go to the Central League and talk about what happened in the first two games over there, and then they're tied 1-1, as I said earlier. And first of all, we were all surprised that, you know, I think the day before it said Shota Imanaga of the Bay Stars was going to be starting game one for DeNA, and then we get the game time, and it's not Imanaga.
Well, the same initials, you know, that was SI. It was either going to be Imanaga or Sports Illustrated. Nobody figured on Shoichi Ino.
Yeah, Shoichi Ino's on the mound, and, you know, jaws are dropping, you know, from here to Toronto. And, but he pitched well.
Wow, right. Indeed. In fact, I could hear jaws dropping in Mississauga. He did pitch well, but somebody, and I don't know, it was one of my Twitter followers said, I apologize, I don't remember which of you it was, but said he pitches well in the start and he gets hammered later in the middle innings. And I looked up the OPS against him, the first nine hitters, it's like 530. The first nine hitters, the first time through the lineup, and the second time it's like 900. And that's pretty much a count. He had a lot of games where he was, I thought, when he was leading 5-0, or when he was, the Tigers were scoreless against him through five innings, I was thinking, this might be pretty rare. And I looked, it wasn't rare at all. He had about five games this season where he didn't allow a run through five innings.
Yeah, well, I mean, I been complaining since the All-Star break that he's a little chunky and he probably runs out of gas. But, you know, it was weird this, you know, we had two games on that first night, both ending in shutouts for the road teams got shut out. And so, you know, pitched well, like you said, and I was thinking when he gave up the hit to Yoshio Itoi in the sixth inning to lead off that inning, I grabbed my phone and I'm like, okay, well, this is the time in the game where you start playing matchups because it's the sixth inning. Eno has thrown, I don't know, he had thrown close to 100 pitches, I believe, at that point. And, you know, it's really time to consider whether to match up here. And before I could finish the tweet, Kosuke Fukudome hits a two-run home run.
And yeah, Fukudome has hit him pretty well in the past, so I wasn't too surprised about that.
Well, yeah, but that's why you get him out. You know, you say, you know, and I know, and I can understand the hesitation because it's the sixth inning. It's that who do you bring in and who do you, anybody with a left hand who can go through those two guys, I would have brought him in at the beginning of the inning if it was me, but especially once Itoi got on, you know, facing Fukudome, he has really been a clutch performer for the Tigers all season. That was a bad spot for him. I really thought he should have been taken out. But you know, you're not going to win any games if you don't score runs anyway. So they ended up not scoring. If they had gone to extra innings, maybe they would have pushed home a run. Maybe not. Who knows?
Yeah, it was an interesting game, and I love, you know, one thing I love about Alex Ramirez, I haven't spoken to him about this game, but I'm curious, and I'm thinking, he pulled that one where, you know, when you look at the Tigers pitching staff, there's one guy who it's a little reminiscent of the Lions. They got one guy who's really good.
Uh-huh.
And then they got a bunch of guys who are not bad,
right?
Who aren't going to kill you, who aren't going to kill anybody. That's the problem.
Yeah, yeah. And, that's the problem. Yeah.
Okay, they're not killers. And the thought that occurred to me was, well, Randy Messenger's going to pitch game one, so the chances are bad. We'll give a guy who might surprise them. And if we can time it right, if we can get him, maybe hold them to two runs, we'll have a chance. And more or less, he said, he held them to two runs in six innings. That was a job well done. And we didn't get the other part. So I think that was part of the plan. And then to come with Shota Imanaga and Joe Wieland in games two and three, who got guys who I think at Koshien this year were 5-0.
Yeah, I remember Joe winning. In fact, I said it in the interview with Joe that when he won his first game there.
Right, and they were 10-2. Those two guys were outrageously successful against the Tigers this year. So I think that was the plan, was to give Randy Messenger, who came back from injury and has looked like what. Broken leg? What broken leg?
Yeah, he looks really good. Looks like he's rested. Got the rested arm.
Yeah, and yeah, indeed, he looks dangerous. I'm really keen to talk to him. So that was, he was razor sharp, and didn't really give the Bay Stars much of a chance. And that was that game one. So 2-0 for the Tigers.
Yep.
On a beautiful evening in Koshien.
And then
a beautiful afternoon in Koshien, yeah. I should say.
And then for game two, it ends up being what was the final score on that thing? 13-6? I lost count.
I can't count. You're asking me, I don't have enough fingers.
Yeah, 13-6 was the final. The Bay Stars indeed evened it up with 21 hits. And I got the funniest note from Michael Westbay.
Oh, yeah.
Who said all was well in Mudville?
Oh, how come I'm okay, Michael? I this is props to Michael. I was searching all day, all afternoon. The people on the sports desk were searching for appropriate words. But there was, in fact, no joy in Mudville.
No, the Mudvillians were not happy, but there was joy for the Stars.
Indeed. Yeah,
great game for them. Now, you know, it just, they were determined to play this game. And,
well, yeah.
And I thought the way Tomoaki Kanemoto went about it early was perfect. He was getting runs. He just played to get the run to keep the game either, you know, one up on them or tied, because a tie was a win for them,
mm-hmm.
and keep the pressure on the Bay Stars. And in mm-hmm. all that slop, you know, it just seems to me, I mean, I've heard people talk about it. I've heard Alonzo Powell used to tell me about it all the time. It's hard to hit in the rain. Mm. You're hitting this round object with this round bat, and it's slick. The ball's wet. The bat's wet. You can't see. And it just seemed like it was the reverse in this situation, that the pitchers just couldn't get their footing. And nobody could throw mm-hmm. the ball exactly where they wanted to, and there were a bunch of fat pitches, and everything got hit, and so
but here is the thing. I think the guys were trying really hard the pitchers were aiming the ball a lot. They were worried about their control.
I just think they couldn't. Their landing wasn't good. I mean, you saw guys constantly on the mound, you know, taking care.
Well, the Koshien mound actually looked better than it does all season because of all the dirt they dumped on top of it. Yeah, because normally it's indistinguishable from a gopher hole.
Well, all the mud puddles and water puddles on that infield. It was just a sloppy mess.
Right.
I thought they should have stopped this thing, you know, before.
Yeah, we saw a double that was hit behind first base.
The mud double, I called.
Yeah. And basically, if the ball was not hit in the outfield, not so much, because these guys are wearing spikes and the grass was keeping the mud in check, and the outfielders seemed to be able to move a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But the infielders in that slop, you know, the range was limited to a few feet.
Yeah, but
if you didn't hit the ball at somebody, it was through for a hit.
But the Bay Stars were amazing. They just seemed to, all the bunts and all the plays that they needed to make, they made, and the Tigers missed on a couple, and that opened opened the floodgates in the seventh inning. But 13-6, and I was thinking there was one instance, and I think it was Kanemoto went with his bullpen ace all season, Kentaro Kuwahara, and I thought he just left him out there too long.
Okay.
He didn't seem to have it that inning, and he just didn't look like himself in the seventh inning, and it just seemed like he just didn't seem comfortable out there. He just was not himself. I've seen him pitch a lot more confidently, and again, all season long. But I just thought, you know, Kanemoto just said, well, you know, this is my guy. I'm going to stick with him. And he wasn't getting guys out. He wasn't getting people out. And it just, you know, the seventh inning just kept going on and on for them. And the bad thing, I think, for the Tigers that bodes poorly for them going into the game today or on Monday is that they use six bullpen guys. Marcos Mateo threw 35 pitches, and the fewest was Akifumi Takahashi, who threw 13, but the only guy they didn't use was the closer, Rafael Dolis. So I don't know. That just seems like too many guys worked too many innings, too many pitches, and I know it's just one day, and usually these guys throw again, but a lot of those guys threw more than 20 pitches. And I just think that he had to blow out his bullpen just to get through this game when maybe he could have used some other people. Now, they have a deeper bullpen and they have other guys they can probably go to. But let's, you know, we have to think of a doomsday scenario for Monday where everybody's, you know, all hands on deck and you've got to use these guys again. And I'm not sure the rain's going to stop. And I'm sure they're going to try to play this game tomorrow as well.
Yeah, well, they had to, you know, and it was an interesting dilemma because this is a game that they could have called early, but had they called it early with the Tigers leading, then the Tigers would have been going crazy.
What, with the Tigers leading?
Yeah.
The Tigers would have been going crazy?
Well, sure, because if they'd called it before five innings, if they'd called it no game when the Tigers were leading 3-2, the Tigers would have gone nuts. And you can't do that in NPB. you can't anger the Tigers. And then once the Bay Stars took the lead, they might have called it, because they couldn't call it when it was tied, because that would have given the series to the Tigers. So that wasn't it. Once they were past that five inning bit, it was really, they had crossed the Rubicon and they couldn't really call it. Although I suspected that once it was a 10-4 game, they might have. But the rain at that point wasn't raining hard. It was raining.
Yeah.
In the beginning, it was. And actually, the funny thing is, in the highlights of the game, they showed the first inning. And I'm going, oh, the field looks beautiful. So it wasn't raining. They picked a spot an hour after the projected start time, and they picked a little window when it wasn't raining to start the game. And I'm going, well, it's like a different day.
Yeah.
Because the rest, it was a swamp fest. It was the mutter of all playoffs games.
Oh, how cute! So yeah, it was. I mean, yeah, it was a good.
It was a different kind of game. Yeah, I've never seen a game like this.
Show of fortitude, I thought, by the Bay Stars, they would not be denied, and they kept coming back. And I wasn't sure. In fact, when Zach and I made our predictions, and I didn't think the Bay Stars were going to get through, and I didn't pick them to win a game, and. I'm glad I'm rooting for him. I said on the show last week, I really like Alex Ramirez. I like what he has done. I like how he has changed the culture and made this team's basic approach different. And mm-hmm. I was so happy for the kid Tomu Otosaka hitting that home run.
I
thought, oh, that's too bad. That's foul. And even when it went in, I thought that's foul, isn't it?
That's the shortest home run distance in any NPB parks is right down the line at Koshien. It's such a huge park, but down the line it's short.
So good for him.
Good for him. He's been he's had just a horrible season. So yeah, good for him.
And I remember you saying on the show before that the Bay Stars have had their problems with pinch hitters all season, so I was happy for the fact that Ramirez got a guy up there and you know, they like to say the right guy in the right spot. I'm not sure that was the situation. I think it was the right. I think there was the right pitch in the right spot.
Yeah, exactly. And the ball and the bat hit it.
And the bat hit like it.
It looked like, what do I do now? Am I supposed to run to first base or something or what?
Right. So we don't have anything set for the second round, but I'm going to try to make a prediction anyway. So I think if the Eagles go through against the Hawks, I will. And again, we have to speak in nebulous terms here because there's
can't even pronounce nebulous, man.
The one win advantage that the second round begins with the home team or the pennant winning team. So you have game one, but then once the game one is, let's say the home team wins it, then the series is 2-0 for the pennant winning team. All of a sudden, if you just played one game,
and so they only really and wild. They don't and they don't need to win four games,
and they don't it's need a, to win four games
exactly. because of a tie. You know, we've seen game. A couple of them end in a tie. So
right, so nebulous. Yes, it's all wild, but. Yeah, we always talk in on-field games on this show, so that's what we're talking about here. And I would say the Hawks only need to win three games, and I think if it's the Eagles, they probably will only play three games. I think if the Lions make it, I think the Lions get at least one, maybe two, but I'm going to say four games on the field that the Hawks will advance. What do you say?
I like that. I think that's probably accurate. The Lions have enough offense that you can't afford to make mistakes. But it's going to be fun, I love watching the Hawks pitchers go at it. They work aggressively. They have the Kishi plan, which is I'm going to throw it in the strike zone, and if you can hit it, if more you can catch the pitch, exactly. I'm going to execute my pitches, and you try to put a good swing on it, and let's see what happens. And they're smart enough to know sometimes you got to be careful. But there's no let up in that line. You know, once you get past Ginjiro Sumitani, there's really no let up in the Lions lineup. So, but the Lions pitchers can't really compete with the Hawks, I don't think.
I don't think so. I think that's the biggest difference.
And the one guy who should be able to compete against them has never beaten them in his life.
That's Kikuchi.
So there you go. Your best pitcher can't beat him. And so let's see what everybody else can do. But right. Brian Wolfe has had good luck against his former teammates, and that's probably where we'll see him.
Yep. All right, and then the second round in the Central League, I think the Tigers have been as bad a matchup as the Carp have had all season, I think. Especially early on, they seem to have their troubles with the Tigers, and including a huge comeback where they were at Koshien and couldn't hold a lead. But so I think if the Tigers go through, I could see them winning a couple games, actually, against the Carp. But I'm still going to go with the Carp to get through the Japan Series. If it's the Bay Stars, I'm totally... It's just a mystery, because if the Bay Stars get past the Tigers, whom they really shouldn't get past if you look at the talent, I think they'd be on a roll. And they actually have decent pitching. It's not outstanding pitching, but they have the depth in the rotation to bring in a couple guys to get through those first two games, maybe grab one. But I don't think they have the offense to compete with the Carp on a nightly basis, and I could at most see them winning two games, but realistically I only see them winning one. So I would say on the field, the Carp get by in four games against the Tigers and in five games against, I'm sorry, four games against the Bay Stars and in five games against the Tigers.
Well, the Carp have some, they're not quite the Carp we saw most of the season, because they're not going to have Seiya Suzuki, and he's really their MVP.
Yeah, but they did. I mean, for me, they played. It's not like Ryuhei Matsuyama is going to be the best number four hitter or cleanup guy in the postseason, but he did an adequate job, and I think they have enough guys to make up for the loss of Seiya.
They're short a couple areas, you know, and Tomohiro Abe, a guy I really like, he's been hurt. Takahiro Arai, who's got his little aura about him, you know, he's got that little, you know, people make those funny gifs and pics of him because he's such an exuberant guy. But, you know, I was thinking about a month ago in Yokohama. I walked up to him and I said, "Hey, MVP!" And he smiled and laughed. He's going,
"He said, oh, that's right."
he didn't. You know, I said it like I was. He knew I was taking the Mickey, as they say, and he just smiled and laughed. He's just a wonderful guy. Now that he's back wearing red,
yep,
and. And he's been hurt. He played in a live game today. So, they're not 100%, but they're also so gosh darn confident. They know they're so much better than the rest of these guys. I expect them, and they've been there before. This is something you can't see. We didn't used to be able to say this about the Carp.
Right, they were just there last year. Seems like yesterday.
That's right. But, you know, the Bay Stars have been there too. So I think it's going to be fun. I like the Bay Stars matchup again better, and I think it's going to go. I think they'll both go five games either way. I think the Bay Stars are going to get another game. They looked a little tongue tied last year in Hiroshima. I think they'll play a little. They'll be a little more competitive.
Okay, so that's five games on the field for those who are keeping score.
For those of you counting at home,
keeping score at home. Yeah. Okay. Just one note, this past week, the Chiba Lotte Marines introduced Tadahito Iguchi as their new skipper. He's going to take over on the bench. Now, he mulled over this offer for a while, but it seemed like it was going to be obvious that he was going to take the position. So I'm not sure what kind of manager he's going to be, of course, but I think his teams will be well prepared. I think he's going to make sure he's got enough power. I think guys like Willie Mopeña, who did actually play really well, I think he had his best performance with any team that he has been with in MPB with that second half that he had with the Marines. I'm not sure that that's saying a lot because he really wasn't productive with the other teams that he was with.
Well, he had, you know, he had the one good season with Oryx.
Yeah.
Well, he was he won a Best Nine award, so.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I haven't seen that production. I mean, you know, I expected a lot from him. His highest batting average is .268.
That's William O'Pena territory, baby.
Yeah, he owns 255 it. .255 with Oryx, you know, in 2014, and had 32 home runs. And I think that, you know, they saw the long ball, and that was it. But
the other thing is
140 games, and he had he had 70 home runs. I'm sorry, he had 15 home runs in 70 games this year for the Marines. So I think, you know, that's you know, almost comparable.
32 is a good number for this is something I wanted to. I was looking online with someone one of the many people who do put data up on the web, and he had his park factors out. And something I noticed last year when I did long-term park factors is that Kyocera Dome, for some reason I cannot fathom, has gone from being a really, really good home run park to being a really, really tough home run park. And that started happening 5 or 6 years ago, and I don't know why. So his 32 runs in Osaka Dome was pretty impressive, actually. Okay,
I remember.
I throw that out there. Right now, Chiba is one of the toughest ones. So there.
Yeah, well, and like I said, I think that Iguchi is going to look for guys who, you know, can hit the ball out and can be a presence in that lineup. And so I think that bodes well for Willie Moe coming back.
Yeah, yeah. Iguchi's an interesting guy. He said a couple of interesting things since. Okay, first of all, you know, the announcement that he was offered the job came, I guess, the night before. He was offered the job technically the night before of his retirement game. I think they were figuring, well, he's going to want to come out and announce that he's going to be our manager. And according to the report, the source that was saying he has decided, he'd actually decided fairly quickly, but he didn't want to be a distraction as the team tried to put a good finish on the season with Tsutomu Ito, which is really Iguchi. He's a real class act. He's a friendly guy. He's a warm guy. He's a good communicator. Bobby Valentine said, who didn't want him on his team, and I say that not because he didn't like Iguchi, but he'd had health troubles and he was 34 years old, and he had a 26-year-old second baseman he wanted to start, and the team came in and said, here's your new second baseman. We just took $1 million kickback to sign him to a big contract.
Thanks.
I mean, that's not how they put it, but the two guys who signed him got run out of Dodge the following year after it was found, you know, some financial issues were somewhat murky. But anyway, but Bobby, having said that, said, I knew what a good player he was in the States and in Japan, but I never dreamed he was such a good teammate, such a positive force in the clubhouse. And Iguchi said at his sayonara game, I guess, he said, I'm going to be back. I'm going to be around with the Marines in some capacity. And that was not, I don't think, telling. But then when he went to the throw out the first pitch at a White Sox game a few days later.
Right.
He said, when I left here, my goal was to come back and wear a White Sox uniform again. Now, that to me was interesting because on the podcast, somebody asked us about 2 years ago, who speaks the best English, which Japanese player speaks the best English in NPB? And I asked several people, and Iguchi was one of the guys, and he said, are you kidding me? He didn't say that in English, though. He said, Masaka. He said, English, I didn't have any time to study English. I was playing baseball, man. Yeah. And he said, but having said that, when I retire, I want to go to the States, and then I want to study English.
Hmm.
And then he said that. So that intrigued me. So I'm thinking, you know, like, you know, the Swallows have hired Junji Ogawa to come back. And I my impression was to be, you know, to hold the, keep the seat warm for Shinya Miyamoto to get used to the job. And Iguchi may see this job as a stepping stone to coaching in the States.
Interesting.
Yeah, which one would never think, but he was like a number of, you know, like Sotaguchi and Hideki Matsui, and those two, he was in that group of three who were extremely well respected by their teammates and their managers and their coaches.
And appreciated, I think, yeah.
And appreciated for their attitude and their leadership. And I think that's the thing. Attitude, leadership, intelligence.
Yep.
And I would say more so, I don't want to slander Hideki Matsui. You know, he's a sharp guy.
Then don't.
But I think Iguchi, when it comes to just being really, really clever and smart and tactful, Matsui is tactful and humble, but Iguchi just impresses you with how smart he is in very subtle ways.
Yeah, that he does. I think he's going to be a good manager. I think he's going to build the team. I don't think he's just going to be a figurehead either. I think he's really going to take control and try to build the team. And I like what the Marines did the last month of the season, and they look pretty strong. So I'm looking forward to seeing a better product out there on the field next year.
Well, I think they'll be a lot calmer, I really know precious little about what goes on, but that was what struck me about Ito, is that he did weird stuff in 2007 in his last year with the Lions, and when all the revelations came out, and he was doing weird stuff today. You know, the team had a lot, and I heard it was not a rare occasion where after a night game the regulars were out taking extra BP.
Yeah.
It was fairly common event, a fairly common occurrence. So that's pretty extraordinary. You know, he didn't let the pressure up. He let everybody feel the pressure quite a lot.
Yeah, well, we'll have none of that with Iguchi. But all right, well,
one never knows.
Yeah, I think they're going to be prepared, but not over prepared. All right, so we will look forward to talking to you next week about the second round of the climax series that we just had to guess about tonight. But
if our predictions are accurate, they'll both be finished by Sunday night.
That's true too. So yeah, but hopefully they won't. We'll have one more, at least one game that we can talk about before we focus on the draft and the Japan series.
And the real climax of the season.
Yeah, the real climax of the season. All right. Anyone who has a question, please send it to us by email, yakyujohn@gmail.com, or hit us up at Twitter at JBWPodcast with the hashtag HighHeat, or you can leave us a note on the Facebook page. Thank you very much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark. Fun doing business with you, Mr. Gibson.